Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We're up to book 13, chapter 9. Oh, I'm starting to get confused with these numbers. I think I got that right. With regard to military matters, Napoleon immediately on his entry into Moscow gave General Sebastiani strict orders to observe the movements of the Russian army, sent army corps out along the different roads, and charged Murat to find Kutuzov. Then he gave careful directions about the fortification of the Kremlin and drew up a brilliant plan for a future campaign over the whole map of Russia. With regard to diplomatic questions, Napoleon summoned Captain Yakovlev, who had been robbed and was in rags and did not know how to get out of Moscow, minutely explained to him his whole policy and his magnanimity, and having written a letter to the Emperor Alexander in which he considered it his duty to inform his friend and brother that Rostopchin had managed affairs badly in Moscow, he dispatched Yakovlev to Petersburg. Having similarly explained his views and his magnanimity to Tutolomin, he dispatched that old man also to Petersburg to negotiate. With regard to legal matters, immediately after the fires, he gave orders to find and execute the incendiaries. And the scoundrel Rostopchin was punished by an order to burn down his houses. With regard to administrative matters, Moscow was granted a constitution, a municipality was established, and the following announcement issued. Inhabitants of Moscow, your misfortunes are cruel, but His Majesty the Emperor and King desires to arrest their course. Terrible examples have taught you how he punishes disobedience and crime. Strict measures have been taken to put an end to disorder and to re-establish public security. A paternal administration chosen from among yourselves will form your municipality or city government. It will take care of you, of your needs, and of your welfare. Its members will be distinguished by a red ribbon worn across the shoulder, and the mayor of the city will wear a white belt as well. But when not on duty, they will only wear a red ribbon round the left arm. The city police is established on its former footing, and better order already prevails in consequence of its activity. The government has appointed 2 commissaries general, or chiefs of police, and 20 commissaries or captains of wards have been appointed to the different wards of the city. You will recognize them by the white ribbon they will wear on the left arm. Several churches of different denominations are open, and divine service is performed in them unhindered. Your fellow citizens are returning every day to their homes, and orders have been given that they should find in them the help and protection due to their misfortunes. These are the measures the government has adopted to re-establish order and relieve your condition. But to achieve this aim, it is necessary that you should add your efforts and should, if possible, forget the misfortunes you have suffered. You should entertain the hope of a less cruel fate, should be certain that inevitable and ignominious death awaits those who make any attempt on your persons or on what remains of your property, and finally that you should not doubt that these will be safeguarded, since such is the will of the greatest and most just of monarchs. Soldiers and citizens, of whatever nation you may be, re-establish public confidence, the source of the welfare of the state. Live like brothers, render mutual aid and protection one to another, unite to defeat the intentions of the evil-minded, obey the military and civil authorities, and your tears will soon cease to flow. With regard to supplies for the army, Napoleon decreed that all troops in turn should enter Moscow as marauders to obtain provisions for themselves, so that the army might have its future provided for. With regard to religion, Napoleon ordered the priests to be brought back, and services to be again performed in the churches. With regard to commerce and to provisioning the army, the following was placarded everywhere. Proclamation. You peaceful inhabitants of Moscow, artisans and workmen, whose misfortune has driven far from the city, and you scattered tillers of the soil, still kept out in the fields by groundless fear, listen. Tranquility is returning to this capital, and order is being restored in it. Your fellow countrymen are emerging boldly from their hiding places on finding that they are respected. Any violence to them or to their property is promptly punished. His Majesty, the Emperor, and King protects them, and considers no one among you his enemy except those who disobey his orders. He desires to end your misfortunes and restore you to your homes and families. Respond, therefore, to his benevolent intentions and come to us without fear. Inhabitants, return with confidence to your abodes. You will soon find means of satisfying your needs. Craftsmen and industrious artisans, return to your work, your houses, your shops, where the protection of guards awaits you. You shall receive proper pay for your work. And lastly, you too, peasants, come from the forests where you are hiding in terror. Return to your huts without fear, in full assurance that you will find protection. Markets are established in the city where peasants can bring their surplus supplies and the products of the soil. The government has taken the following steps to ensure freedom of the sale for them. 1. From day to day, peasants, husbandmen, and those living in the neighbourhood of Moscow without any danger bring their supplies of all kinds to two appointed markets, of which one is the Mokhovia Street and the other is the Provision Market. 2. Such supplies will be bought from them at such prices as seller and buyer may agree on, and if a seller is unable to obtain a fair price, he will be free to take his goods back to his village, and no one may hinder him under any pretense. 3. Sunday and Wednesday of each week are appointed as the chief market days, and to that end a sufficient number of troops will be stationed along the high roads on Tuesdays and Saturdays, at such distances from the town as to protect the carts. 4. Similar measures will be taken that peasants with their carts and horses may meet with no hindrance on their return journey. 5. Steps will immediately be taken to re-establish ordinary trading. Inhabitants of the city and villages, and you, working men and artisans, to whatever nation you belong, you are called on to carry out the paternal intentions of His Majesty the Emperor and King, and to cooperate with him for the public welfare. Lay your respect and confidence at his feet, and do not delay to unite with us. With the object of raising the spirits of the troops and of the people, reviews were constantly held and rewards distributed. The Emperor rode through the streets to comfort the inhabitants, and despite his preoccupation with state affairs himself, visited theatres that were established by his order. In regard to philanthropy, the greatest virtue of crowned heads, Napoleon also did all in his power. He caused the words Maison de ma Mère to be inscribed on the charitable institutions, thereby combining tender filial affection with the majestic benevolence of the monarch. He visited the foundling hospital, and allowing the orphans saved by him to kiss his white hands, graciously conversed with Tutomelin. Then, as theirs eloquently recounts, he ordered his soldiers to be paid in forged Russian money which he had prepared. Raising the use of these means by an act worthy of himself and of the French army, he let relief be distributed to those who had been burnt out. But as food was too precious to be given to foreigners, who were for the most part enemies, Napoleon preferred to supply them with money with which to purchase food from outside, and had paper rubles distributed to them. With reference to army discipline, orders were continually being issued to inflict severe punishment for the non-performance of military duties and to suppress robbery. All right, there we go, another chapter down. That makes 9 chapters in a row without characters. 9 chapters without characters. I gotta say, so far book 13 is not good. Like, 9 chapters of exposition is just, it's not good. It's frankly a bit boring. You know, I want to know what our characters are up to. And I mean, I don't mind if a bit of exposition, a few chapters of that zoomed out sort of state that Tolstoy takes, but 9 chapters is too much, isn't it? like, I think it's pretty typical of the average reader to care more about the characters than the politics surrounding them. Anyway, maybe it's just me. Turtle Vader said, "Do the Russian proclamations seem Orwellian to you? Why or why not?" I think the proclamations in 1984 are supposed to seem like war proclamations or like peacekeeping proclamations in wartime. So they're, I suppose, mimicking the same thing. Tolstoy's ones are meant to be a little bit more realistic, I suppose, whereas Orwell's ones were meant to be part of his allegory, almost like fable, something along those lines. Turtle Vader also said, "My appendix has a note for the proclamation to the artisans and working people, extolling its accuracy. It also says that they are written in very bad Russian. Do you think the English translation does these historical passages, any justice?" Well, that's interesting. So Turtle Vader's reading the PNV translation. We didn't get any appendix that said anything like that or any footnote. But that's interesting to know that your version did say that these were written in bad Russian, because they were written for the Russians by the French, if I'm not mistaken. That didn't come across in this translation, I don't think, that they were written in poor Russian. Too Clever by 87/15 said, "I thought this was a nice bit of Tolstoyan humour." Classic Tolstoyan humour, known for his humour. Tolstoy was. With regard to judicial matters, immediately after the fires broke out, orders were issued for the guilty persons to be found and executed, and the miscreant Rostopchin was punished by an order to set fire to his house. A little bit of irony there, I suppose. Classic Tolstoy. The great comedy novel, War and Peace. You know what, to be honest, I want to know what's happening with Pierre and Natasha and Sonia and Maya and Nicholas. Really, that's what I want right now. So this is all great to know what's happening in the world, in their world at large, but I'm ready to zoom back in now. All right, thank you very much for listening tonight. Please do check out the Patreon page. Keep this podcast going. Let's keep reading great literature together. Patreon.com/A Year of War and Peace Podcast. Awesome. I will see you tomorrow.